you really need to know what you're going to sell. And if you offer services, well, you definitely need to know what services you're going to offer. We cannot just file an umbrella trademark or a trademark just to protect the name.
Hi, I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. If you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, just go to theamazonmastermind.com. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective Podcast for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon sellers. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Today, we are here with Anita Maher, the founder of Trademark Angel and a registered trademark agent, and they specialize in working with Amazon sellers, so dealing with intellectual property and trademarks and all that kind of stuff. So, Anita, warm welcome to the show, first of all.
Yes, hello, Michael. Hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here.
Excellent. So where are you coming to us from today, Anita?
Well, it's complicated. I'm in Turkey now, but flying to Italy on Sunday.
Wow, international lifestyle here. Yeah. Sounds like sunnier places than Britain. Anyway, I was in Italy recently, and of course, it's always sunny, and here it's always cold. So I don't blame you for going to the warmer places. So tell us a tiny bit about yourself first. What is a trademark agent, and specifically a registered trademark agent? We're used to trademark attorneys or attorneys who specialize in intellectual property. What is a trademark agent in contrast with that?
Well, a trademark agent, because I am a trademark agent in Canada, so you have to be a trademark agent. It's not enough to be an attorney to register trademarks. I've been in the trademark field since 1999, and I've been a trademark agent since 2008. And our company, Trademark Angel, is actually turning 7 in May, so I'm pretty happy to celebrate that milestone.
Excellent. So just that small thing. So in Canada, you can't just be an attorney if you want to register trademarks. You have to be a registered trademark agent as well. Okay. Interesting.
Yes,
so it's slightly
different. Yes.
But you presumably work with people who register trademarks in places like US as well, I guess.
Yes. We work with licensed attorneys in many countries and we register trademarks in many countries. Yes.
Okay, cool. So you've got a very international view, which I think can be very helpful for all sorts of people, not least at my sort of, I suppose most target listener is British Amazon sellers, so a lot of listeners are in the US. So what you have to say is relevant to both, I guess. So first question then is, what is a trademark? Can you define it for me? Because I think people get a bit vague about what it even means.
Yeah, a trademark is a source indicator. That's what it is, like in short. So it's a shortcut between the product and the company. So that's how your clients, your customers find your product. All they have to do, they have to remember the trademark name. They don't need to remember the company name because the company name may have like international, TD, corporate, and it may or may not coincide with the trademark. But a trademark is basically, it's like a lighthouse. So it shows you where you need to go and what you need to buy. You just remember the trademark and you're good.
Yeah, and I think that's immediately quite an important point, that it's about how customers remember you and who they associate with a certain name. So if I put the name, for example, in the piano world, which my wife's a pianist, I was a musician, you put the word Steinway in here, you have an association with a very, very prestigious quality company, whereas there is a thing called Steinweg, which is, of course, produced by the Chinese, which is a really terribly horrible piano, but it almost stands the same. So again, you're starting to then get into the people trying to fool consumers. And I guess that's one of the reasons for trademarks to exist, right? Is that right? Or is there sort of, what's the sort of driver behind the legal existence of a trademark in the first place?
Well, the trademarks give you monopoly for your specific products and services. They don't really give you monopoly for everything. So as long as the products are different, two very similar trademarks can actually coexist because there is no actual confusion because the products do not overlap. But okay, if they do overlap, it's really helpful to have a trademark then.
Okay, so it's about not getting confused consumers in some ways.
Yeah. So let's say you go to a store and you see a product that you like. It doesn't matter whether you buy it or not. So let's say you leave the store and you come back a week later and you suddenly see this product and you look at this product and you think that you've seen it before. And you look at the packaging, you vaguely remember the name and you buy it because you think you saw it before and you're confused into thinking that that's the same company is behind the products, and but the company may actually be different. So maybe the new product may be different from the previous one. So that's what it's about. I mean, it shouldn't be confusing to customers. So if the names are very similar and the products are similar, then there may be trademark confusion.
Great. Okay, so that's a nice sort of background on what trademarks are. Now, the question is really why, not so much why they matter to consumers, although obviously we've got to care about consumers if we're selling to them, but why do they matter to us as e-commerce products creators and sellers?
Well, I mean, there are so many benefits of trademark registration, really. I mean, a trademark gives you exclusive rights to use your trademark for 10 years, and you can renew it indefinitely. A trademark increases the value of the assets of a company. So the longer you own your trademark, the more valuable it becomes, and obviously the more money you can get if you sell your business, because the reputation increases, the goodwill increases, and the value of your trademark is increased. Like a registered trademark creates a presumption that it is distinctive, that it's valid and owned by the registered owner. So if there is ever a dispute about the trademark, the burden of proof will lie on the party challenging the registered trademark. You, as the registered owner, don't need to prove your rights. They've been checked by the trademarks office. So your trademark is presumed to be valid. I think one of the really important benefits is that it's much easier to enforce your rights if you have a registered trademark. You can send a cease and desist letter, and usually that's enough. If you don't have a registered trademark, you have to prove your rights, as I said. And it's not always easy, and it's pretty much your word against theirs. Last but not least, if you're an Amazon seller, if you sell online, actually, if you sell on Amazon, Walmart, like Shopify, TikTok now, you need a trademark to get benefits of the brand registry, or like a Walmart calls it, like brands portal. So it's really important for e-commerce sellers, online sellers, because without a trademark, it's really difficult to succeed right now. Oh, and one last thing I wanted to mention, if you want to franchise your business, you need to have a trademark as well.
Okay. So yeah, franchising might be beyond most people that I know, although I think that could be the next wave in e-commerce. Who knows? There's always something. But yeah, so why register it? So I think there's a distinction there between having a trademark and registering, isn't there? So now I can't remember which way around it is, but in the UK and US, you have common law systems and statutory law systems, if I remember all of that. So you can show evidence that you've got a trademark, even if you haven't registered it. But you're, I guess, talking about registering it. Is that, tell me a little bit about that. Let's knock that one out of the way.
Well, yeah, so basically you have common law rights in some countries, so it's like Canada, US, like Australia. So it means even if you don't have a registered trademark, you can still prove your rights because you've been using like a particular brand name in the past, but it's more difficult and more expensive, and you really need to go to court for that. You cannot send a cease and desist letter. So if you have a registered trademark, your rights already presumed and they've been checked by the trademarks office, so it's easier to prove your rights by showing a trademark certificate. So that's why people do it, because once your trademark is registered, it's easier to enforce your rights, I mean, by sending a cease and desist letter. Another really important benefit, and often overlooked, is that once you file your trademark, register your trademark, it becomes visible in the official database in all countries. So if a competitor is looking for a similar name, so let's say they've come up with a name that's pretty similar, and they check the database and they see your trademark, and hopefully they will stay away. So you don't need to do any work. I mean, your trademark will actually work for you because it will be visible in the official database. And hopefully that competitor will stay away from your name or may rebrand it a little bit.
Yes, that does, if they've got any kind of brain. I mean, so if they do, I guess even a quick Google search will reveal if you're on Amazon or whatever and a similar name. But if they do their homework and look on the, is it TESS, for example, or the British equivalent, I can't remember the name of it now, then it will be on the
check.
Database.
People do check the database, or they go to attorneys, or even like we have like very sophisticated clients who actually come to us prepared. They've done their searches, they check the database.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty easy to check.
It is. Yes, I'm not saying that it isn't easy to check. Is this some people are? There's no limit to how dumb some people's behavior is. But most professional business owners will check that their trademark's available. Good. All right. So the next thing then, a quick question that comes up: are you protected with a trademark just because you've created a limited company or some variant on that in America?
No, having a company is not the same as having a trademark name, and actually the trademark name may be totally different. So if you registered your company, incorporated your company, like formed an LLC, it doesn't mean that you have trademark rights. I mean, trademark rights arise from the fact that you've used a particular brand with a particular product. Just because you called your company like ABC Limited, it doesn't mean that you use this trademark ABC Limited on your products. So you may have no rights, no trademark rights. So company name doesn't really give you any trademark protection by itself.
Okay. And so you've raised a point there, which is, again, one of these complicated things, that the name that you're using, or the word mark, or the logo, or any sort of art mark, or whatever it's called, is associated with a particular product. So there has to be a product out in the market base before you can trademark. Is that correct?
Yes. And that's right. Actually, it's one of the most important things is to determine what you're going to do, like what you need the trademark for. So it means you need to have a business plan. So you need to know, okay, if you sell products, you need to know what products you're going to sell. So you need to do your homework, do the product research, and decide, okay, I'm going to sell products. You know, I'm going to sell plush toys. I'm going to sell like some kitchen-related products, like pizza cutters, lemon zesters, and I'm going to sell maybe t-shirts, right? So that's good. But if you think, okay, I'm going to sell some kitchen-related products and maybe something else, some household-related products, but I'm not sure, then we can't really file a product because it's too vague. It's not specific enough. We cannot say household products or kitchen-related products. It's very broad. So you really need to know what you're going to sell. And if you offer services, well, you definitely need to know what services you're going to offer. We cannot just file an umbrella trademark or a trademark just to protect the name, make sure no one takes it, without the specifying the products or services. It's just not possible. And sometimes people come to us too early. They know they need a trademark, but they haven't done the product research. So we cannot file then because they're not ready.
Okay, so interesting. So I guess we're coming down to when should you file a trademark? So where does there have to be a product out in the marketplace actually selling then? Or is that too late? You don't have to wait until that point?
No, you don't need to wait until you actually start selling. It may be too late to file by then, but you do need to know what you're going to sell. So once you know what you're going to sell, once you've done your product research, once you bought a domain name, maybe once you formed your company or LLC, then we can file your trademark. But I think the order is like this. You search for a domain name. You get it because it's really cheap and easy and quick. So get the domain name. Then you can form the company. And the company doesn't need to coincide with your trademark name, as I said. It can be a numbered company. It can have a completely different name. It doesn't matter. But if you plan to have a company, like set up it first, and then we can file your trademark. But before filing the trademark, it's important to do some Google search as well. You know, do some internet search to make sure your trademark is actually available, that it's not used by anyone. Because even if it's available to file, if you find that there is some company who already uses a similar trademark, it may be a good idea to, you know, find a different name.
Yeah, and I would say is that there's an interesting thing that I feel personally that marketing and the law coincide here, which is you want to have a clear identity that doesn't fool the customers, that the customers associate over time your products and the name of your brand or your trade, your word marks, or what do you call it, art mark or something, your logo and things like that, with a particular product. Yeah, so you don't really want to be unclear in your marketing, and you want to be clear in the legals or it's not going to work either. So in other words, if you can find a very similar brand name, even if you could get the trademark, my question as a marketer is, why would you want to do that? Be clear in your identity. So I think as long as you do things that make sense from a marketing point of view, it will probably make sense from a legal point of view. And I think one of the things that I see, and this would be interesting to take get your take on this. I see a lot of people that on Amazon, there's a lot of very private label looking brands that say things like kitchen products, Zhenzhen, or kitchen amazing or something. So in other words, they kind of describe the type of products that they sell. And I've heard from trademark lawyers in the past that you can't really trademark those easy because they're often, particularly in the US, they're rejected as quotes descriptive or generic words. So tell me a bit about choosing the name.
And I want to just maybe take a step back, like where you talked about like similar trademarks. So let's say you found a trademark that you like, and there are no registered trademarks, but you find some company who basically does business under a similar name. Like, think about it this way. Like, once you set up your website and you start getting traffic, you will lose some traffic to your competitor because they will be going to your competitor. They will be doing the keyword search, and they will find your competitor So you may lose quite a few clients to a competitor just because the names are similar. So it's a good idea to come up with a distinctive name, with a unique name. So there is no confusion, because you don't want to lose clients to your competitors. And yes, you're talking about descriptive marks. They may be good from the marketing perspective. You may think so, because yes, let's say you sell ice cream, you call your ice cream cold and creamy. Yes, it's pretty descriptive, pretty good, but all ice cream is cold and creamy, really. So you cannot enforce your trademark. It's not unique enough. Or let's say hot and crispy for baked products. It doesn't have a unique word. It doesn't really identify it as your product, because all baked products are like they're hot and crispy, or like many of them. So you really need to come up with a trademark that has a unique word that identifies with your business. And it's really good to have a story behind it. Like, why have you come up with the name? Like, it's good. I mean, customers like this. I mean, they like to read a story. So if your trademark name is really boring, I mean, it will not be memorable, and it will be similar to many other, you know, brand names out there in the market. So I think having a good story behind your trademark is really important too. I mean, and you have to have a reason why you called your trademark the way you did. So the best way, well, not the best way, like a good way is to have a trademark name that consists of a unique word. Well, just let's talk about like our company example, Trademark Angel. So the unique word is angel. The descriptive word is trademark. So it's pretty easy to understand in what field we are. We are in the trademark field because we have the word trademark. But the unique word is angel. So we are like angels, not real angels, obviously, but we're angels in the field of trademarks. So it's pretty easy to remember. It's memorable. But on the other hand, it's suggestive of the business, you know, of the industry we're in.
Okay, so that maybe that word suggestive is a word that lawyers like. So suggestive of, but not descriptive of. So cold and creamy, yeah, describes any ice cream company in the world. But like, you know, Ice Cream Angels, if you wanted to take, yes, that idea, would be to describe the product quite literally in one word, but to give a something that is less literal, that is just more interesting, more unique. So yeah, that's, yeah, an interesting way of doing it. I like that a lot because it's simple. I mean, so I've worked with so many clients in the startup stage, and you know, people get very, very, very wrapped up in this whole business of choosing a name. And yeah, you want to choose a decent name. All I would say from experience is, look at some of the businesses out there. Some of them have names that are really well chosen, but they nearly didn't. Like Amazon, for example, was nearly called Abracadabra. And the reason was simple, because everything was listed alphabetically and AB turns up right at the top of the list. And the only reason that Jeff Bezos didn't register that as a name was apparently that he said it to a couple of people. I can't even say it for some reason, but so people said, oh, it sounds a bit like cadaver, i.e. dead body. And that was not a good association. And of course, Amazon is an amazing association because it's a mighty river, but that ended up happening. If he'd called it Abracadabra, would the whole business have folded? I don't know. It might have been slightly less valuable. I suspect it still would have been a giant corporation. So people can get hung up on this stuff as well. Is that this, to flip the coin here, or to say the other side?
Oh, yeah.
Figure something else that works. Talk to your trademark agent. And if it makes sense, then get on with it, because I promise you, having a magical name, it still doesn't make your business great. I've come across clients who spent so long working on their name, they'd never launched a product, and the name was beautiful, but the product's never existed. So there you go. Now let's move on to dealing with, assuming that you've got a trademark. Well, let's work on the bad scenario first. Let's assume you're selling on Amazon. You don't have a registered trademark, although you've been trading under that name for a while, and a competitor starts using your trademark. What should you do at this point?
Well, by a competitor starts using your trademark. So let's say, are we talking about like a hijacker, or are we talking about just like a competitor who creates a similar listing?
Good question. Well, would it be the same in both? Well, give me both. Let's deal with them separately.
Well, so let's say if you just do your business, you don't have a registered trademark, and a competitor comes in and they start selling similar products under a similar trademark or the same trademark. Well, it will be difficult, because pretty much you'll have to sue them, because you can't really say they're infringing on your trademark because you haven't registered your trademark. You can file your trademark, wait until it's registered, and then basically say it's trademark infringement, or you can sue them, but it's expensive. If there is a hijacker on your Amazon listing, so that's like a more common scenario, so somebody just starts selling a similar product using your listing and putting a lower price and basically get in the buy box. So you do all the work, you create the listing, you put beautiful photographs, beautiful description, and anyone can sell from under your listing on Amazon. So somebody find a similar product that may be an inferior product, and they use your listing to sell their product. Basically, they don't do any work other than finding a similar product. And then if you lose the buy box, so it means that the sales go to your competitor who may not have, you know, the same product. In this case, well, you're not in a very good position because you cannot really do anything. If we talk about Amazon, unless you have some kind of insider who can help you, which we strongly do not recommend using nowadays because it will backfire. Well, at this point, you really need to file your trademark as soon as possible and get access in the brand registry at least. And that may prevent future hijackers, but it will not get rid of the existing hijackers. But what it will do, once you're in the brand registry, it will be visible to everyone because you will have your own store. And future hijackers will see that. And that's the first thing they do. They will check to see if you as the seller are in the brand registry. If you are in the brand registry, they will stay away from your listing because they don't know whether your trademark is registered or not. And they will find another victim who is not in the brand registry because then they know you pretty much cannot get rid of them because you're not in the brand registry. But that's the logic behind it. I mean, there are a lot of sellers nowadays, and it's so easy to find somebody who's just beginning or maybe who's been selling for a few months and has had, you know, mild success. And it's easier to use them to hijack their account rather than go to a seller who is in the brand registry, who has a good, you know, shop with a few products, and they may have a registered trademark. In this case, hijacking their listing will be pointless. They will get rid of you immediately. They will report violation and you will be removed.
Okay. So yeah. It sounds like, to simplify, you are in a bit of a bad position if you don't have a registered trademark and somebody tries to hack you. I presume that you can send a cease and desist letter and they may or may not desist. I guess it's up to them whether they do. But I would say it's always worth trying to do something rather than just doing nothing. But nevertheless, it sounds like you're just underlining how important it is to on with registering the trademark. All right, good. So let's talk about filing a trademark then. So we talked about when to file, you know, mm-hmm. basically when you're clear what types of products you're selling. You've got a company, you've got a domain name and you bought the domain. Probably I would say you want to get the social media accounts that go with it as well. Or if you can't, maybe you just take the hint that you shouldn't be using that name. And then what's the best way to file? Let's talk, I guess your different jurisdictions work slightly differently. Let's talk about the USA first, which is probably for most of our listeners, including UK ones, one of the most common.
Okay, you mean the best way to file?
Trademark, yeah.
What to file for, like a wordmark or a logo, or how to file it?
All of them. Well, whichever one of those you want first, I guess we need to cover all of it.
Yeah, well, first of all, you need to determine whether you're filing for a text mark, a standard character mark, or a logo. An image mark, or maybe a combined mark. A combined mark consists of a word mark and image together. So that's the first step you need to do. You need to understand what you're going to file for, and your trademark lawyer, your trademark agent, the person you're working with will help you to understand what to file for. Because you don't file blindly, you will do a trademark search, so you will know if your trademark is registrable. We usually recommend to file for a word mark, so text mark, if it's available, if it's registrable. Sometimes we see some similar trademarks, so filing for a word mark may be tricky, may be difficult, and we want to reduce the risk of getting an objection from the trademarks office. And in this case, we may recommend to file for a combined mark. So word mark plus image plus logo together in one file, and it's called a combined mark. It's usually more registrable, because the logo is memorable. Well, hopefully it's memorable and it will be remembered by your clients. But there are some limitations when you file for combined mark. So you have to use that mark on your products, that combined mark, you have to use it together. You cannot separate the elements. So you cannot take the text and just use the text. You cannot change the logo. So there are some limitations, but sometimes that's the only way to file, especially if you cannot rebrand and the word mark is problematic, then we recommend to file for the combined mark.
It sounds to me like that would be something you'd only want to do if you have a sort of situation where you're already constrained by an existing product name or something, because I know one of my clients has had this problem. He's a UK-based trader and he tried to get a trademark in the US and was told that he couldn't get it. But I would strongly suggest, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, but you really want don't be locked into your first version of a logo. If your brand takes off, most people's first version of a logo is pretty bad, and that's okay when you're starting off. But if you're forced to keep that forever because it's the only way you can keep your trademark and brand registry, that's a hell of a limit on your visual identity, I would say, isn't it? I mean, so presumably you would always go for the wordmark if you possibly can.
Yeah, but let's say if you want to file in multiple countries, I mean, it's extremely difficult to be able to file your wordmark in all of the countries of interest. So it may be available in the UK, but it may not be available in the US or Canada. So what do you do then? So in this case, you can file for a wordmark where it's possible and file for a combined mark where it's problematic. Because once you register your combined mark, let's say in the US or in Canada, it's always easier to file your second trademark just for the word and claim ownership of your previous trademark. And the second trademark will be easy to get in this case. But if you file for a wordmark and it's refused, well, because both Canada and US, they follow the precedent system. So the second trademark may be refused as well.
Okay, that's very interesting. So if in doubt in the US and Canada, particularly, that you should go for a combined mark. And so above all, avoid rejection, because that kind of goes on your file and they'll hold it against you, even though
that doesn't
sound very logical, but that's how they actually work. Yeah, by the way, I would say from experience, and this is an amateur experience, I'm not a trademark attorney or anything official, is that the UK is a lot easier to get a trademark in the US. Is that your experience as well?
Yes, because in the UK and in the European Union, the trademarks office just examines your trademark on absolute grounds, meaning that they only look to make sure it's not generic and it's not descriptive, it's not immoral. If it's not descriptive, not generic, pretty much they approve your trademark and register it. And then it's up to third parties to file an opposition if they think it's too close to their trademarks. And this approach is really different from the US, Canadian, like Australian approach and like most other countries, where they do examine your trademark on relative grounds as well, meaning they check for similar trademarks. So the trademarks office will actually do a trademark search. And if there is a similar trademark filed or registered, they will refuse registration of your trademark. So in the US and in Canada, in Mexico, in Australia, it's much more difficult to register a trademark because of this.
Okay, and what was that they check on? Was it absolute grounds and relative grounds, something like that? What were the words?
Yes. So in all countries, they check to make sure your trademark is not generic, not descriptive.
Yeah.
But in the European Union and UK, they check just for that.
Yeah.
And then they approve your trademark. And it's pretty much, it's a free world, right? If you disagree with the trademarks office, you have an opposition period and you can file an opposition. So you and the company. But in the US and in Canada, they check for similar trademarks. So they check to make sure your trademark is not descriptive, not generic, and they check the database to see if somebody filed a similar trademark. And if they did, then they refuse your trademark and you have to submit arguments explaining how your trademark is different. And if you persuade the examiner, then your trademark is approved. And then it can still be opposed by a third party. So the procedure is much more complicated.
Yeah. So there are basically, there's a whole more sort of official filtering process in the US and the UK. I mean, basically in the UK, I've had an awful lot of, this is why a lot of, I guess, you know, it's good and it's bad. I guess it's a bit like Texas. It kind of attracts people who want a low regulation environment in the UK. And that can include Russian oligarchs who've just kind of casually stolen billions out of the former Soviet Union, living in London and forming companies in the Cayman Islands. And, you know, so if you're running a business, though, you know, registering a company here is incredibly quick. There's almost no checks at all. Famously talking the word angel, I think somebody registered a company here once famously. There was something called Heavenly. They put their nationality as angel and their address is heaven or something. And it got approved immediately. There's no checks or balances here. So that's good if you're running something. And the US, you know, if you're UK based and are used to that freewheeling environment, the UK is a lot easier than the US. But so again, and a reason to go to an expert, if you're going to do it yourself in the UK, that might possibly work. If you're going to DIY in America, it's going to end in tears, I think, isn't it? So just to be clear about the difference between the wordmark and logos, well, to make sure that we're really precise, because the devil's in the detail here. So the combined mark is the logo and the wordmark. Now, if I created something like my name, let's say I wanted to create, I wouldn't do this because I think putting your name in is a bit complicated, but let's say I want to create VZ Limited and I had a fancy font, but that was my name with a fancy font in it. Would that count as a combined mark, or how does that work with the names?
If it's not standard characters, it's a combined mark. So you really don't want to be filing your trademark in stylized font because font cannot be really protected anyway. So you're just limiting yourself for no reason. And I don't recommend to include your last name or personal name in the trademark, because what if you sell it later? Who will want to buy? Well, maybe they do, but like no one, most people will not want to buy like, you know, Weezy's corporation because, well, it has nothing to do with them. So yeah, I don't recommend to, you know, to include any personal names or last names. Or even, so let's say if you sell on Amazon, I actually don't recommend to include any words like kitchen or health or like vitamins if you plan to expand in the future. So now if you sell kitchen-related products, and let's say you call your trademark, I don't know, Abza Kitchen, and later you want to sell toys, like well, a kitchen will be completely irrelevant. So it will actually interfere with the future development.
I agree with that so strongly. And also the other thing is that, you know, as a business buyer, if you're looking at something like that, it screams private label. It screams what it says to me as soon as I see the word like, you know, Jack's Kitchen products or whatever, or very, very, you know, mm-hmm. name plus specific product. What it says to me is, this person has a very sort of narrow vision. They've decided to do some research, probably using Jungle Scout or Helium 10, which, by the way, everyone else in the world is doing. So that's terrible in terms of protecting the market. It says so many bad things about the company and that the person has not thought through the fact that you just flagged up. So it kind of implies a small-minded thinking by yeah. the business owner. And for me as an acquirer, I would immediately, that would take two, if I'm saying buying a business for, you know, 2.5 times earnings or whatever, I'd say 2.3 times immediately, just because it says so many bad things about the owner. So I agree entirely. You've got to create something that has enough definition to be real, but broad enough to be expandable. Although having said that again, like everyone gets a bit hung up on this, General Electric GE famously was created by Edison as a specialist in electric. Well, they don't own electrical stuff only anymore. So the brand gets big enough, it will kind of handle it. But I agree that it's, you know, why bother restricting yourself really? Although I guess you could say you're a counter argument though, aren't you? Trademark Angel, what if you guys wanted to offer General Legal services?
I mean, that's why it's important to have a business plan. But like, okay. it's actually quite different because when you sell on Amazon, I mean, we've just seen so many clients who start with one product and 2 years later they sell completely different products.
Yeah.
So if you limit your trademark name with the word like toys or like vitamins or like kitchen, and then you go beyond that, I mean, your trademark name will be irrelevant and it will be misleading. So you have to know what you're going to sell. I mean, so it goes to your business plan. But if you jump from product to product, it's not a good idea to limit your trademark with a descriptive word like that, because you may start with toys and finish with, I don't know, some kind of software.
Yeah.
So your trademark will be a bit.
Hey there, folks. Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA here, just wrapping up today's episode. So trademarks may not be, in your view, sexy. Well, guess what? It's not sexy to have your Amazon listing suspended either, but that can happen any day of the week because of a trademark allegation. If you've done your homework and you've registered a trademark, done. You get it fixed within Amazon within a couple of days, maybe, you know, even quicker. If you haven't, I can tell you that from experience, I've worked with clients who've had it suspended for 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's horrible, massive loss of revenue. Guess what? Grown-up business people get the homework done on the legals, whether you think of it as sexy or not. If you're obsessed with Amazon selling hacks, you're an amateur in my experience. Let me just be blunt. Another thing that you may find is if you can't sell your beautiful business for hundreds of thousands of dollars because of a trademark issue, then again, suddenly it becomes very important. Again, see it coming, sort it in advance, and then move on with your life. But get this stuff done. I'm pleading with you. I don't care if you never give me or Anita or anyone else a penny in your life. If you take note of this, my work here is done. So if you want a free conversation with Anita or her team, you can get a free consultation and they will even do a search for you for free to see if your trademark is available. Just go to trademarkangel.com. That's trademarkangel.com. Free consultation, free basic search, up to 3 names they'll check for you. And they are also very straightforward. They want happy customers, so they'll do a flat fee. If they really think the chances of getting registered are very low, they'll even be honest with you, as you gather from Anita, it's very straight up, and tell you that we are not going to take your money because you're going to waste your time with it. Also, they cover other countries, which is really important. We're going to talk about international trademark filing in the next episode, but they cover the places you'd expect, USA, Canada, EU, UK, but also Mexico, China, Japan, Australia, India, and Turkey. So countries that are less common as well. And you should stay tuned. If you source from China, even if you never plan to sell there, which most of us don't, let's be honest, you really, really need to listen to the next episode, because there's some nasty things that can happen if you don't register your trademark in China. And this is not just a theory. Anita's seen it with her clients. So do your homework on that. Come back to us and hear the next episode. If you source in China, you really need to hear that. Other than that, folks, go look at Trademark Angel, book in a free consultation. Doesn't have to be with Anita. Go talk to somebody else, but get this stuff done. Then you can sleep at night. You can have a wonderful business that is protected. When you create value, it is vulnerable. And a grown-up business person doesn't just create value. They then protect what they're doing. And the really advanced thing to do is simple. Protect stuff in advance. So if you're at that sweet spot where you know what market you're going to sell in, you know what the business name is, you've checked it out, you've got the domain name and so on, that's the beautiful point at which to get that trademark done. So if you're in that position, you're in a wonderful place to protect things before you even have any threats out there. So do your homework on this stuff. The older I get, the older and grumpier and some more cynical I get. I think there's wonderful things that happen in e-commerce, but one of the best ways to have a good business is to protect against bad things happening. And a great trademark expert is part of that team. Thanks for listening, folks. Speak to you soon. Random. Yeah, but I would say, so maybe a compromise would be to have some kind of definition. So instead of saying kitchen, you might say home, or instead of saying vitamins, you might say health. At least that's within a broader market that you're more likely to stick within, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so there's so much that goes into a name, isn't there? It's crazy. Hey there, folks. Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA here, just wrapping up today's episode. So trademarks may not be, in your view, sexy. Well, guess what? It's not sexy to have your Amazon listing suspended either, but that can happen any day of the week because of a trademark allegation. If you've done your homework and you've registered a trademark, done. You get it fixed within Amazon within a couple of days, maybe, you know, even quicker. If you haven't, I can tell you that from experience, I've worked with clients who've had it suspended for 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's horrible, massive loss of revenue. Guess what? Grown-up business people get the homework done on the legals, whether you think of it as sexy or not. If you're obsessed with Amazon selling hacks, you're an amateur in my experience. Let me just be blunt. Another thing that you may find is if you can't sell your beautiful business for hundreds of thousands of dollars because of a trademark issue, then again, suddenly it becomes very important. Again, see it coming, sort it in advance, and then move on with your life. But get this stuff done. I'm pleading with you. I don't care if you never give me or Anita or anyone else a penny in your life. If you take note of this, my work here is done. So if you want a free conversation with Anita or her team, you can get a free consultation. And they will even do a search for you for free to see if your trademark is available. Just go to trademarkangel.com. That's trademarkangel.com. Free consultation, free basic search, up to 3 names they'll check for you. And they are also very straightforward. They want happy customers, so they'll do a flat fee. If they really think the chances of getting registered are very low, they'll even be honest with you. As you gather from Anita, it's very straight up, and tell you that we are not going to take your money because you are not, you're going to waste your time with it. Also, they cover other countries, which is really important. We're going to talk about international trademark filing in the next episode, but they cover the places you'd expect, USA, Canada, EU, UK, but also Mexico, China, Japan, Australia, India, and Turkey. So countries that are less common as well. And you should stay tuned. If you source from China, even if you never plan to sell there, which most of us don't, let's be honest, you really, really need to listen to the next episode, because there's some nasty things that can happen if you don't register your trademark in China. And this is not just a theory. Anita's seen it with her clients. So do your homework on that. Come back to us and hear the next episode. If you source in China, you really need to hear that. Other than that, folks, go look at Trademark Angel, book in a free consultation. Doesn't have to be with Anita. Go talk to somebody else, but get this stuff done. Then you can sleep at night. You can have a wonderful business that is protected. When you create value, it is vulnerable. And a grown-up business person doesn't just create value. They then protect what they're doing. And the really advanced thing to do is simple. Protect stuff in advance. So if you're at that sweet spot where you know what market you're going to sell in, you know what the business name is, you've checked it out, you've got the domain name and so on, that's the beautiful point at which to get that trademark done. So if you're in that position, you're in a wonderful place to protect things before you even have any threats out there. So do your homework on this stuff. The older I get, the older and grumpier and some more cynical I get. I think there's wonderful things that happen in e-commerce, but one of the best ways to have a good business is to protect against bad things happening. And a great trademark expert is part of that team. Thanks for listening, folks. Speak to you soon. I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind. Masterminds for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. We give you everything you need to grow your business to high 7 figures and finally start to get that lifestyle you were promised when you went into this. You'll get clear plans from world-class specialists on things like intellectual property law, e-commerce, image and video marketing, financial engineering, and paid advertising, to name but a few. You'll create bulletproof plans to survive the recession. You'll double check with your peers that they make sense, and then you'll make a plan to make a killing on the rebound. Most importantly, you will actually transform your business. You'll create listings that convert, build a brand that connects, and get premium pricing. You'll learn the latest advertising hacks and master stock management, as well as avoiding Amazon curveballs. Above all, you will create a big, bold 3-year plan for a 7-figure exit. And unlike other programs, we don't just hype you up and then abandon you. You'll have your peers in the mastermind giving you insights from their own businesses and keeping you on track through peer accountability and a little bit of friendly competition. And we'll also have those experts double checking everything you do makes actual sense. If you finally want to start becoming the entrepreneur you've always known you can be, if you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, go to theamazonmastermind.com to find out more today.